Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives. And it's my favorite time of the week. I love the mini episode.
You do?
It's my fave.
That's good. Yeah. I like the full length better.
Really?
Yeah.
I love them.
I'm always like, let's get through the mini so we can get to the full.
I mean, it really depends, I guess, on what's in the news.
Yeah.
Like, I've got some good stuff from the news as
well. I mean, I always enjoy it.
It's not good stuff.
Right, but it's like interesting stuff to talk about.
Right.
It's not like I like don't like doing the mini episode, but I always get so into whatever we're talking about for the full length.
Yeah.
That I'm like, let's like do it so we can get to that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I like those too. I like them all. Okay.
Okay. So we're gonna stop picking favorites. Like we should pick a favorite child.
Yes, exactly.
We
You're
can't
totally
pick a favorite
right.
Child.
You're totally right.
I know.
But if you guys have a favorite, let us know. Anyway.
I think most people like the mini episodes the best.
Really?
Interesting. We've gotten a couple people who are like, especially the mini episodes. And I'm like, that's surprising to me because I'm like, at least for me, I feel like I don't know what I'm talking about half the time. I'm just like faking it till I make it.
Well, don't tell them that. But I do feel like people need an easily digestible way to absorb information.
Right. I guess I just never thought of myself as being like a person who would bring the news. Like, I'm not faking it. Like, I know what I'm talking about, but like, I feel like a fraud. Because I know there's people out there who probably know a lot more than I do.
Oh, well, yes, yeah, certainly for both of us. There are people out there who know more. But we do a good job, okay?
Thank
we
you,
do a good
Keegan. Job. Thank you. What's on your agenda for
I have
this
one big thing. So if you've got a couple of things, you go first.
I do have a couple of things. I wanted to talk about the bombing in Sri Lanka.
That's probably the worst thing, so you should start with that.
Okay. So, and this is really interesting because I have a friend, Sean, from Sri Lanka. You've met Sean.
Right, yes.
And a lot of this took place in Colombo, which I didn't know was where he's from.
Really?
Yeah. And so he wrote on Facebook, like, my family is okay. Thank you, everybody, for, like, checking in with me and this whole thing, which I was like, holy shit, that's crazy. So on Easter morning at St. Anthony's Shrine, with 1,000 church attendants, an explosion ripped through the church. There were a total of 8 bombings on that day. 359 people lost their lives, which makes this one of the worst terrorist attacks since 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
There were 45 children killed and 500 wounded.
Yeah.
Like, just absolutely horrendous and horrific.
I think the, I could have this wrong, so don't quote me entirely, but I think that the owner of ASOS, the CEO, I think he lost, like, 3 out of his 4 children.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to look into that. The bomb struck 3 luxury hotels, 3 churches, and 2 other locations, and several attacks took place in the capital of Colombo.
Yeah.
So here are some things that we do know. The Indian intelligence officials warned the Sri Lankan counterparts just hours before the first bomb detonated, but they failed to act. There have been multiple disregarded alerts before this.
Mm-hmm.
So the Indian international officials had alerted them multiple times of a possible attack, and it was not carried on to the proper people and the proper heads to get it under control.
If I heard correctly, this was in direct response to the Christchurch shooting.
That is something that people aren't saying is 100% for sure, but they have reason to believe that it could be.
Yeah.
Lawmaker, I'm going to say this really wrong, and I apologize, Wijedasa Rajapaksa, doing my best, you guys, called for the arrest of 2 top security officials, and President Maithripala asked those 2 officials to resign. Wijedasa claims that they hid the threats from the prime minister. So that's kind of the whole thing, is that there was a way to kind of prevent it, or at least like let
lessen
people
the
know
impact
exactly ahead of time, and those actions were not taken.
Why?
That's
Did they
trying
think
to figure
they were
out.
A hoax?
What, I don't know.
Were they in on it?
They're,
like,
they're trying to figure out why that was the case, because they think they know who did it, but again, it's one of those things where like, I'm just going to keep going. There's more stuff that we'll talk about with it. So the suicide bombers who attacked were well-educated, middle-class Sri Lankans. They were 9 bombers. They blew themselves up, 8 men, 1 woman, including the man described as the leader of this homegrown militant Islamic group. So that's kind of what I was saying. It's like they're not quite sure what this group is, who they kind of have an idea of who this leader is. They have an idea of who these people are, but they're not like 100% certain and all that kind of stuff. So 60 people have been arrested in connection to these attacks. And the Sri Lankan officials said the bombings may have been in retaliation for the attacks in Christchurch, like you said. What we don't know yet is that they have yet to confirm the so-called leader killed in the attack. They're thinking it was someone named Mohammed Zaharin. How these small groups pulled off such attacks, because this is like a homegrown militant group, so mm-hmm. they're kind of surprised as to like how they got away with it, and the extent in which the Islamic State or other terrorist networks assisted with these attacks, and why authorities didn't prevent the attacks in the first place. So those are all things that we are not entirely sure of yet, but there's definitely, it seems like, a lot of people very invested in investigating this and learning more, because, you know, 9 people were suicide bombers, so 9 of them are gone. They want to know who these people are and what they're
connected to. They collaborated with someone, most likely.
Yeah. So they're trying to figure out if there was someone higher up or another group or somebody helping them and assisting them,
you know, in this. It's really, like, sad and upsetting because it just feels like we're going to end up blowing each other up.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just going to go back and forth.
Well, yeah, I mean, clearly that's not the way to handle any of these situations. I truly don't believe, I mean, and that's how I felt about 9/11, too, because when I was young, I didn't really understand why we were going to war. To me, 9/11 and the war were one and the same. Like, that was the reason why, because I had no knowledge of it when I was 9.
Of course, yeah.
So for me, I was like, well, why are we... I think
that was most Americans' understanding of that situation.
Yeah, so when I was young, I was like, why are we doing the same thing to them that they did to us? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. That doesn't make anything right, you know? And that's kind of how I feel like the situation is going. Well, it's like, well, if you're going to do that, we're going to do this. And they're just going to keep going back and forth.
Well, because their actions felt justified because of the thing that happened to them.
100%. So. And I understand the reason that you would feel so frustrated and want to take action in some way. And I know that there are a lot of, you know, usually mentally ill people that don't understand, like...
I don't even necessarily think it's people who are mentally ill, just like I don't think that, like, white or Christian terrorists are necessarily mentally ill. I think they've been radicalized by these mm-hmm. ideas that are oftentimes rooted in religion or violent ideologies. I think you can take a perfectly healthy mind and, like, do all this shit to it.
Yeah, I didn't mean mentally ill as in, like...
Yeah, no, I know, I know what you're saying.
To me, when I think mentally ill, I think of, like...
Disturbed, like, in some way.
Disturbed,
yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's a lot of people, these vulnerable people, you know?
Yes, and I think a lot of people, if put in the right situation, can dissociate themselves from something awful that they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that might be the case here, regardless... It's devastating. I've seen absolutely some of the pictures coming out of Sri Lanka, and, you know, it just, all of this, I'm really feeling very sensitive right now. I think my period's gonna start. Seriously.
Let it out, Keegan, let it out.
But all of this, like, the stuff that we saw coming out of New Zealand, and the stuff that we see coming out of Sri Lanka, and all of these images that are happening constantly, it's so heartbreaking and sad, and it feels hopeless because it just feels never ending. Like, it's never going to stop.
And I feel like you never become, at least I never get desensitized to it.
No, it's always terrible.
You see where it's always like, it never seems like, oh, another one. It's always this thing for me where it's just, it's more frustration and sadness mixed with, like, other than, you know, being something where I'm like, oh, well, it's just another, like,
I think it's both for me. I think it's both. I think it's like, I think that's part of what makes it so sad, that it's like, oh, another one.
Yeah.
Another one. And this is never going to stop, ever. Like, I think that that's the thing that's most distressing to me, is, like, I don't see a way when people will stop wanting to blow each other up.
I mean, it's never been any other way.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at history, that's always been how it's been handled.
Yeah.
So... I don't know what it's going to take for that to change.
You know.
Agreed. I don't think there's anything that's going to stop it entirely. I hope that it becomes less frequent, that people, you know, that we can focus on particular, you know, groups and ideologies, and, you know, hope that one day it'll change at least a little bit. That's all I'm asking. It's just like a little bit less devastation.
Less
would
terrible.
Be great, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Should we move on to something else?
Yes. So, the Mueller report was released this week.
Okay.
It's highly redacted, so there's a lot of pages that... There are some pages that are almost completely black, because this report launched a bunch of other investigations.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some things that cannot be released. But if you are interested in knowing what's in this report is over 300 pages long.
Mm.
So most people, the average American, is not going to sit down and read 300 pages and figure out what they feel about everything in this report. So if you want someone to do that for you, Robert Evans, who's the host of Behind the Bastards.
Okay.
One of the smartest people I've ever heard speak. Like, I love listening to his podcast because the way this person can, like... So Behind the Bastards, like, they focus on a different person every week.
Yeah.
He will read full books and make notes on those books for his podcast.
Yeah.
And so he read the entire Mueller report and made notes on it. And then he paired up with the hosts of the Daily Zeitgeist, and they had...
I was waiting for you to say Daily Zeitgeist. Yes. I was waiting.
They had a 2.5 hour long episode.
Did you listen to it?
Yes. Well, most of it. I didn't finish the very ending of it. But if you want to hear this thing broken down...
I'm totally going
to
do that.
Listen to them talk about it.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting because we had William Barr, who's the Attorney General, his assessment of the Mueller report that came out a couple weeks ago that was a kind of very shiny, vanilla version of the report.
Right.
Where... Everyone on the right news media, Fox News, the president himself.
They saw it as a victory,
They
saw
it as a victory. Yeah. Because that's the way that William Barr wrote it up.
Yeah.
Having seen, read, and heard what I've heard about this report now, William Barr should go fuck himself. Because, yes, while this report could not prove collusion under the law or, like, conspiracy under the law, which is a very narrow scope. I mean, it's basically saying, like, they didn't have an email from Trump's team to Russia that said, hey, can you do this thing for me? In return, we'll give you this thing, XO Trump. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't, like, that's kind of, that's what they needed to find in order to really get him for collusion.
The XO involved.
Yes.
That's, like, a really important
They needed to pull
factor.
that exact sentence
exactly.
out.
Exactly. If the XO wasn't there, it didn't matter. It had to be hugs and kisses.
So they weren't able to find that, but they absolutely found, Mueller absolutely found that Russia interfered with our election. He's got complete proof that they interfered with our 2016 election. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that Russia did is that they spread tons of misinformation on the internet, which is something that we knew, this whole thing about Russian bots. That stuff is true. Like, they spent time here in the United States, like, learning about Americans and American culture, learning the best ways that they could spin this because they wanted Trump to win.
Yeah.
And they said that in no uncertain terms. They did not want Hillary to win this election. So they started a lot of fake news accounts, fake news, fake social media.
Which is hilarious because that's Trump's, like, slogan.
Right. I mean, literally, they were spreading fake news.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's one of the things that Facebook came under fire for, because Facebook knew that all of these things about, like, Hillary Clinton, you know, Pizzagate, all of these things weren't true.
Yeah.
And yet they were allowing it to be shared on their site as if it was real news, like alongside real news.
Holy shit.
And Russians were behind that. Russians were behind the hashtag Hillary for prison. They spread that. Spread that around.
Gosh.
2 days after Trump made the joke about Russia should look into Hillary's emails, Russia looked into Hillary's emails.
Of course they did.
And again, there's no way to say for certain that Trump knew, like, when he said that to the TV screen, that he was talking to Russia. But he very clearly knew that somebody was doing something.
Yeah.
We just don't know if
that's
he knew
eerie.
It was Russia.
Like, that's pretty fucking eerie.
They were behind the leaked DNC emails. Mm-hmm. They coordinated pretty directly with Julian Assange of WikiLeaks to leak when all that stuff came out about Hillary during the election that WikiLeaks released. They were behind that. And the infamous pee tape that the whole thing about, like, Trump being peed on that came out.
Oh, yes.
That they said that they had, they found evidence that there was an email between Michael Cohen, who was Trump's personal lawyer at the time. He received a text, sorry, not an email, from a Russian businessman, I can't even say his name, Grigory, in October of 2016, and it said, quote, stopped flow of tapes from Russia, but not sure if there's anything else, just so you know.
Oh my gosh.
And these tapes were held by persons associated with the Russian real estate conglomerate Quercus Group, and they're the ones who held the 2013 Miss Universe pageant, which is creepy.
So creepy. Wait, so, okay. explain this to me again. When we say we're looking into the Russians, we're looking into, like, what would be the equivalent of, like, a Russian FBI kind of thing?
Well, what Mueller was looking into, and this is why, we're going to get to the second half of this in a second, but, okay. Like, the reason why William Barr was able to spin this as a win is because the scope of Mueller's investigation was so narrow. He needed to prove collusion, which means that the Trump campaign and Trump himself knowingly conspired with a foreign government to fuck up our elections. Okay. Like, they needed to prove that that happened. They needed a direct link. And so they found...
Because that to me still seems pretty broad, that they would be looking into the Russian government. Like, I feel like if that's a pretty broad
search. Well, but they need to find a link that Russia interfered with our elections.
Well, and it's true, like, looking through things like emails and any sort of correspondence would probably narrow it down.
So they've proven that Russia interfered with our election.
Okay.
What they can't prove beyond, like, any reasonable... Well, I mean, to me it's reasonable, but, like, they can't prove a direct tie between the Trump campaign and Russia and saying, like, you help us win... And we'll give you this.
Okay,
like, they can't prove
that. Because I was going to say, to me, the correspondence between Michael Cohen and the Russian government, like,
well, but it was a Russian businessman. It wasn't a Russian government official.
Got it.
So there were, like, meetings between Don Trump Jr. and, I think, Jared Kushner and some people on the Russian side to talk about, like, a Trump Tower in Russia. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of talk about that being kind of, like, an exchange situation.
Yeah.
But a lot of that stuff was redacted because it's very possible that Trump Jr. or Kushner could end up being indicted for something.
Yeah.
But it should be said that when there's so many great quotes in this report, one of which is that when Trump found out he was being investigated by Mueller, and you tell me if this sounds like an innocent person, when Trump found out he was being investigated by Mueller, he said things like, quote, I'm fucked. And, quote, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And my presidency is over. He said all of these things.
Well, how do we know that he said all these things?
Because Mueller interviewed a bunch of people and wrote down the things that they said.
Oh, shit. So, like, multiple people were saying Donald Trump
said I'm fucked. He was concerned. So then the second half of this...
Man, they kind of threw Trump under the bus there.
Well, yeah, man. And I'm sure they're sweating bullets now that this report's being released.
Oh, yeah. They're like, Trump knows
that they talked some shit.
Yeah.
So they couldn't get him on collusion, obstruction is another story. Mm-hmm. Because Mueller, it's kind of hilarious because Mueller's basically like, I don't even fucking know. They all lied to me constantly. So it's so clear that he obstructed justice and that the people on his team obstructed justice, that they did things in their power to try and keep the investigation from going forward.
Yeah.
He, on multiple occasions, tried to get the Mueller investigation shut down,
yeah.
Told people to do it for him, all of that stuff. So there's a quote here. We determine not to make a traditional prosecutorial judgment. The Office of Legal Counsel has issued an opinion finding that the indictment or criminal prosecution of a sitting president would impermissibly undermine the capacity of the executive branch to perform its constitutionally assigned functions in violation of the constitutional separation of powers. So he's saying, I cannot find a sitting president guilty of a crime. But he does everything in his power to be like, listen, I can't find him guilty of obstruction, but Congress can. And maybe if Congress wants to take a look
wink,
at this.
Wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, he says that pretty consistently.
Yeah.
Where he's like... He said, it's not the special counsel's job to find him guilty of a particular crime, but that Congress should look into it, basically. He didn't say that, but he said that.
Yeah.
And he writes 200 pages where he's like, I can't say that he committed obstruction, but if I could, I would.
It takes 200 pages. That's some Alexander Hamilton shit.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, listen, I really want to drive this home. He says... And I quote, if we had confidence after a thorough investigation of the facts that the president clearly did not commit obstruction of justice, we would so state. So he's saying, like, if we could say that he didn't commit obstruction, we would tell you that. But yeah, we can't say it. And he says, accordingly, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it does not exonerate him. Trump did things, and I'll wrap this up pretty quickly. Again, guys, go listen to that episode if you want 2.5 hours of, like, details.
For sure.
Trump asked multiple people to speak to Comey on his behalf.
Yeah.
Which you're not supposed to do. He tried to get Jeff Sessions to stay on as Attorney General when Jeff Sessions stepped down and said things to Jeff Sessions that were like, I'm not going to ask you to do anything super shady, but I just want a fair go of it. So I really want you to be the person.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is really shady.
Yeah.
Jeff Sessions was like, no, thank you. And Trump asked Sessions in the beginning when the Mueller report first started, the Mueller investigation, first like started ramping up steam. He asked Sessions if he could limit the counsel's scope to future presidential elections rather than the 2016 election. He's like, look, I get where they're coming from. Just if we don't commit any crimes from here on out,
yeah,
just have them look into that.
Yeah.
They don't need to look at the crimes we committed in the past.
Yeah, that's in the past. It's already happened.
Which really indicates to me that he really did directly commit a crime. If he's like, do not look at this election. Not just that, because a lot of people are like, he may have not directly committed crimes, or he may have not knowingly committed crimes. He may have just been complicit or been an idiot. Yeah. I mean, and that's basically what I have. Again, there is so much more, but I want everyone to rest easy knowing if you were waiting for the Mueller report to come out and then you read William Barr's summary, or you saw the way that the right was responding and you were like, what the fuck?
Exactly.
Just know that no. Trump campaign and Trump himself do not have their hands clean. It's messy as fuck. And honestly, shame on everybody on the right for completely, I don't give a fuck, even if you like Trump, even if you're super conservative, Russian interference got in the way of our democratic process, of our presidential election.
That should make everybody angry.
A foreign government interfered with our election. That should be, we're living in the upside down that's not on the fucking front page of every newspaper.
Exactly.
That's insanity.
Yeah.
But anyway,
you go. Anyway, there's something like really positive I want to talk about, but I do want to throw out the fact that Joe Biden is officially in
the
race.
That was the other thing I had to talk about. Joe Biden announced his candidacy today.
The end.
Yes, that's it.
Well, there will be more candidacy talk in the future.
Yes,
yes. But I want to at least mention that we are aware of the situation.
Yeah, yeah. Acknowledge that it happened. Yes. I have mixed feelings about it. Yes.
Yeah. So on and so forth. You know who we are. Okay. So have you seen the new Netflix show Special?
Is that what it's called?
It's called Special.
I thought you were like, the new network show Special. No. I have not seen it.
Special.
I have not.
It's fantastic. It's 15-minute long episodes. It's written, created, and starring this guy, Ryan O'Connell, who is a gay man with cerebral palsy. And
It
was a semi-autobiographical show.
I saw it was trying to make me watch it. Netflix. I saw the ad for it.
It was trying to make me, I was like, who?
The AI was trying to make me watch it, yes.
It is amazing. He plays a guy named Ryan who is gay and has a mild case of cerebral palsy, and it kind of goes into what it's like not only being a person with a disability living in a very ableist world, but also being a gay man in Los Angeles living in that world. And
intersections.
Oh, it's fantastic. And he was very, you know, he was very worried about it. He even goes on to say something like, when there's only like one seat at the table and you have to be all of the seats, like he has to represent such a broad spectrum.
Yeah.
The cast is very broad. It's very good. It's incredibly funny and witty. He's written for shows like the MTV show Awkward and for Will and Grace. Like, he's incredibly talented. He's been a writer for a really long time. And I know Jim Parsons was a part of it. I believe he was the executive producer.
Awesome.
And I love him. So back in 2015, Ryan O'Connell published a memoir called I'm Special and Other Lies We Tell Ourselves, which details his experience as a gay man with cerebral palsy. He wrote about how when he was 20 years old, he was hit by a car and decided to start telling his friends and coworkers that his limp was a result of an accident, erasing his identity as someone who had cerebral palsy for his whole life. His character on the show also does this. That's a whole episode about how in the first 5 minutes, he's hit by a car, and then he starts this, like, his first internship ever, and he just says that oh, my life, it's like a writing job for like a online magazine. He's like, oh, my life's not very interesting, but I did get hit by a car. And then everybody's like, oh my gosh, that's why you're limping, or that's why we're so sorry.
I think it's such a great indicator and comment on the way that we treat disabled people.
Yeah.
That you would rather, that somehow it's better to have been physically like maimed in a car accident than have a disability.
And I wish I could tell you how it ends. I really, really wish I do, because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But watch it, and it has a really beautiful, lovely payoff that you're going to love. It's 15 minutes an episode. It's the easiest show to watch. If you're like, I have 15 minutes before I turn for work in the morning, turn it on. The girl, I can't remember her name, the girl who plays like his friend from work in that show is amazing. I'm going to look it up right now so I can give her credit where credit is due. Her name is Poonam Patel. Patel. She's fantastic. Jessica Hecht, who plays Susan in Friends, plays his mom.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of... the acting is fantastic. The story is fantastic. I highly, highly recommend the
show. Okay, I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah.
So. And that seems like something I can make happen, because I'm always like, I'll definitely check that out. And then I have no
time.
And
there's like hour-long episodes, and they're serious. And
yeah,
this and, that
and I just
thing.
Don't... I just like... I have to watch Game of Thrones at 10 p.m. because I've had rehearsals. So I'm like, I have no time to watch anything but 15 minutes.
This is
minutes.
A good thing, like, when you're doing your makeup in the morning, to have on your phone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's an easy, easy watch. It's so good. You're going to love it. I highly recommend it. It gets my stamp of approval.
Yes.
Check it out. It's great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, with all of that being said, not jumping your line.
I was like, no. I was like, yes. Spread your wings and fly, Keegan.
If you have any motherhood stories, this is a call for motherhood stories. We realize we haven't been as diligent this year as we were last year about asking for them, but we do really want to do a motherhood episode. We've gotten a few stories, but in order to have a full-length episode, we do need a few more. And if we don't have enough stories, we probably just won't do one, and we'll end up reading the motherhood stories on these mini episodes or something like that. So if you have one you want to share, please, please, please do that. You can email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. Along those lines, Father's Day will be upon us very soon, as will Pride Month. So please send us your coming out stories and your fatherhood stories if you have any that you want to share. Again, for motherhood and fatherhood stories, as well as coming out stories, we want all of it.
Yes.
We want the good. We want the bad. We want all of your personal experiences, because they're all true.
Yeah, exactly. And if you could try to have those into us by like the 5th or 6th, we haven't decided a certain date yet, but that would be enough time for us before we record to be able to get all of your questions together.
So right, divvy them up.
Yeah, Sunday the 5th at the latest, Monday the 6th, I think, is going to be where we're looking at here.
Yeah.
We can get all of your lovely stories together and give you a really great episode.
Yeah. And you can also send us your stories or anything that you want to get to us on our Instagram at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. You can also get us on Facebook. We have a business page as well as a Facebook group. You can leave us a review on our Facebook business page as well as on Apple Podcasts. We love getting new reviews. You can find us on Twitter at YANF Podcast, YANF Podcast. And
that's it. Although we did not say our email, which I'm sure all of you know by heart.
Oh, I did
by
already.
Now. Oh, you did?
I think so. Now I'm questioning myself.
I don't think I heard it.
Well, it's... You go ahead.
I almost just said my personal email. I was like, yeah, it's Madigan. You can email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. Like I said, I'm sure you all have it memorized. You know what to do. You guys are smart. You've been with us for long enough. So thank you guys so much for listening to this week's mini episode. We really appreciate you guys listening to us. With all that being said, we encourage you to
rage on.
Bye.